This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Hey guys, you guys hear me all right?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, Aaron.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think we can start. I'm ready.
Okay, awesome. All right. Are we good to announce?
Yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Woohoo! Okay. Cool. Well, let's tweet it first before making the announcement.
Yep.
Here.
I think they're not expecting the way we're gonna announce this. Insanely great value for both Perplexity users and Revit R1 holders. So yeah.
Yep. All right, let me just go ahead and read it.
All right, so we're gonna start a conversation in a bit, but first of all, we will, both Perplexity and Revit official account will tweet about the announcement for the details. So we're ready when you are. Let's just wait for a tweet and then we can start a conversation.
Okay, I think it's done. So I'm pretty excited to share that Perplexity and Revit are partnering together. So we are excited to power real-time precise answers for Revit R1 using our Perplexity online LLM APIs that have no knowledge cutoff, just always plugged into our search index. And the first 100,000 Revit R1 purchases will also get 1 year free of Perplexity Pro.
Where that came from. I didn't know that Spaces had that feature. But yeah, continue, everyone.
Okay. Yeah, the first 100,000 Revit R1 purchases are going to get 1 year free of Perplexity Pro. So it's basically like Perplexity Pro, 1 year free is $200. So if you pay $200 to purchase a Revit R1, you're getting twice the value.
Yeah. So we had a interaction on X a couple of days ago. And then what's going on next is the following couple of days, teams been working really hard together to make this happen. And I think, you know, to me, it's a no-brainer. If you think about, Revit R1 would price at $199, no, actually not $200, but $199, no subscription.
Fair enough.
And the Perplexity errand is generous enough to offer a Perplexity Pro for a whole year. That was actually $200. So, that's one extra bucks on top of it. So, but I want to share a little bit, background, what's going on, because to us, you know, we've been huge fans of Perplexity from day one since the launch. You know, even though I haven't got a chance to talk to everyone personally, but you know, we are a pretty early startup that we started trying to test their APIs. So we are their customers too anyway. So I think what's most impressed me about, and quite ironically, it's the same reason that why we are so disappointed with, you know, other LLMs out there, you know, for instance, you know, GPTs. And Anthropic, is that they did very, very poorly on web, what they call web browsing or up-to-date search. And that's when we realized and we found Perplexity and we immediately did a test run. That was like many months ago. And the results were insanely good. It beats all the other guys out of water. So even though the way that we connected and we established this partnership is totally new, but I think it's determined to happen, you know, at least from my perspective, because our angle is to bring the best experiences to this little piece of device. And, you know, we choose whoever is the best in the industry. And I think right now, up-to-date information search and general knowledge, you know, I think Perplexity is definitely the go-to choice. And I noticed on the Twitter thread as well, you know, a lot of people are replacing this, replacing the Google search with Perplexity. That's certainly also my case. So I just want to talk from, you know, being a customer myself, being a user myself, that's my angle, why this deal makes perfect sense.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jesse. So actually, for a lot of people might not know here, the way the whole part thing came together was, I think I posted something that's for fun with the rabbit. I think everyone on Twitter was just taking your rabbit device and like posting their product on it on the screen. And then you looked at it and you were like, let's work together, co-tweeted me. And then I co-tweeted you and then you just made it official on Twitter. So we never even actually exchanged emails or anything of that nature or got intros in the traditional way. The whole thing came together just by people being excited for us to work together. So what do you have to say about that? And I guess you're also like, you know, going viral on Twitter, or rather you should call it X here, and how, you know, you've grown so fast, like so quickly. So how are you thinking about all this?
Yeah, so yeah, we're in fact a little bit overwhelmed in the past couple of days. We saw basically RabbitR1 every day was another 10,000. So right now, as we're speaking, the fifth batch, which is the first 50,000 units, already being sold out. That means that we're, you know, 50% already at the top 100K. But what I also want to share a little bit.
So that's like $10 million in sales.
Right? Yeah, $10 million in 5 days. It's okay, I guess. But
pretty insane.
But I think, you know, what we are currently doing is that, you know, now we have a pretty good understanding of the demand. We already pre-communicated with our logistics, you know, regarding to the ODM, OEM, and want to make sure they catch up with the speed. So I think, you know, after this 50,000 units, the future will no longer distinguish in batches. What we're going to do is that we're going to basically work with the ODM, OEM, and our own internal hardware team to catch up with the speed so that, you know, we are no longer facing this, you know, one month shipping. So the goal here is that hard date, March 31st, which is Easter, we're going to start shipping the first batch. And we're going to do our best to ship all the future batches as early as we can. And that's the best we can do at the moment. But I think, you know, hopefully, you know, our partnership will further incentive that, because really, if you just do simple math, you know, $199 and $200 back, that's not too hard to understand. But, you know, more importantly, it's not about the money. It's about you're getting the best experiences in a very, very, well-designed and intuitive device with, you know, not only what GPTs can offer, what the other devices can offer, but with large action models running behind. So I think it's quite promising. And speaking of the deal, I think, you know, Arvind, I'm not sure if you agree with me, but it seems like we accidentally invented a new type of deal making that happens on Twitter with quote retweet. I don't think any, you know, major players have ever done that so fast and have ever done that in such manner. So I want to hear what your thoughts on that. It almost starts with a meme and then we quickly make it official and we quickly make it work on our devices. And then here we have the partnership announcement within a week. So what's your thought on that?
I mean, we love working with you because you move incredibly fast. Like the moment you told you want to work together, immediately we started a Slack channel and then your team started hacking on this and you sent me a demo, like, and then, you know, we got energized looking at the demo. We were like, hey, like these guys work fast, like as fast or even faster than us. And we used to think we work fast, but obviously after seeing you, we think we can do even better. And then we want to make our APIs even faster. So maybe I want to lead from there to, like, you know, your thoughts on the whole voice to voice form factor, right?
Yeah.
Because the Rabbit device is not, is definitely taking us beyond just consuming screens and text and in the form of pixels to like just interacting more naturally. So what are your thoughts on like the next stage of how people consume and interact with all these AI chatbots and assistants?
Yeah, so I think, you know, being our age, you know, we grown up, unfortunately, where the dictation engine were never invented, and then it was invented and it was put in use in a horrible way, that I think our current generation are victims of the early days of the dictation engine, the early days of the natural language processing before large language model, of course, and transformer and all that. So I think, you know, me personally, I identify myself as probably along with everyone here is a PTSD with the early version of the dictation engine. That's why I guess, you know, it creates such a strong impact on our mind that, okay, maybe voice is not the right way to go. I'd rather prefer type. But I think, you know, our principle is very simple. It's that what's the most intuitive way for communication, right? Like, think about everyone. If we convert this Twitter Spaces into a type Twitter Spaces, or into you know, even worse, like a fax Twitter Spaces, non instant message Twitter Spaces, I don't think that, you know, we can deliver all this information in a relatively short period of time. So you know, if you think about how human communicates with human, and you know, before the Neuralink stuff become put in use, and natural language, especially conversation in voice, is still to be the most efficient way. Now the problem becomes easy because we just need to fix the PTSD. But I think if you look at the past 3-4 years, probably like especially past 3 years, a lot of the fundamental infrastructure around that has been significantly improved to where, you know, the younger generation, especially, I'm not sure if you know how many of the listeners here got like probably like 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old kid, but the younger generation that they were born like, you know, after 2010, I see among all the kids that, you know, they actually prefer the dictation icon on the keyboard rather than start typing. So I think the use behavior in a different generation is already starts shifting. And of course, the fundamental reason is because of a lot of infrastructure are good enough, are redundant enough. So for us, you know, we are not saying that, yo, you can only talk to R1. If you shake the R1, the keyboard will pop up. But if you think about the most intuitive way, and if you're in a rush, there's nothing better than just find that analog button, press and hold and start talking. So I guess that's our design principle. You know, we understand the current challenges of difficulties, but we want to push just a little bit further because the method is not wrong, right? The approaching is not wrong. It feels wrong because the technology weren't ready. But I think, like I said, in the past 3-4 years, a lot of infra has been significantly achieved to where we're confident now enough to build, you know, device like R1 is form factor.
Yeah, that's cool. And like, I also want to like, you know, lead you to like your follow-up question there, which is what do you think about today's latency? And what do you think the latency for voice to voice is going to look like maybe, you know, like 6 months from now or a year from now?
Yeah, I think that's a major, like major task here. I was actually talking to our engineer team. I think we should have a special force team just to focus on the latency on all the features, not only on search features, but on all the features. I'll share a story. So I built an app like many years ago called Music Flow. It was primarily launched in Asia because we have partnerships with the music labels back in Asia. And it was not launched here. And the app is extremely, extremely simple. It's just the entire screen is a button. You press and hold and you talk and the music starts playing. And we did a lot of work in the back end to make sure that music starts playing, the first beat starts playing within a second, 800 milliseconds to be exact. And that app just accidentally went viral because of the speed. Like we didn't create any additional features compared to, you know, a traditional Spotify or traditional Apple Music, Google Music. We just did that, you know, voice plus sub-second response time. And another thing we did is that, you know, we basically use natural language processing to parse every part of the lyrics so that you can literally just, you know, rumble part of the lyrics and it still matches the song. So that's basically all the things we did. But I think, you know, hugely benefits from the sub-second response. And that lesson, you know, keeps in my heart so hard. And then we kind of like, when we design a Rabbit OS, sub-seconds is always our goal. But if you look at the reality right now, we already I'm sure a lot of people seen the demos I posted on the on Twitter and on Discord. You know, I demonstrate to play a song, you know, that's on par with sub-second latency. I think in reality, you know, search web browsing, search up to date information, and also some of the vision features like the GPT-4 vision provides and our own, you know, vision features provides, you know, sometimes it takes 2 seconds, sometimes it takes more than that. And vision probably, you know, the first demo I showed probably take like 15 seconds. And we have another version that now currently take about 7 seconds. So those are things I'm not happy with. But I think, you know, latency shouldn't be feature by feature. Latency should be a universal bar for natural language interaction with any devices. And I remember I read a paper. I probably can find that paper later on and post it on my Twitter. But there's a research on human brain understand and handle natural language in speed-wise. I think, you know, there's a couple of the different languages and they can differ very, very differently. Like I think Japanese, as well as a couple of other language, you actually process that information faster because of how the language is structured. But I think 500 milliseconds should be like the golden bar. Like I did a couple of tests internally. I think 500 milliseconds natural language voice response is the golden bar. Like you don't want to be slower than that, but you don't also want to be faster than that. Be faster than that, people scare off because they think that, oh, you pre-listen and you're scary. You answer my question ahead of time. But if it's slower than maybe like, you know, 800 milliseconds, and people will confuse and try to, you know, ask the same question again, you know, knowing that maybe it's a network issue or maybe you didn't quite get the voice right. So I think 500 milliseconds is kind of like a universal benchmark that we're trying to hit on among all the features. That's kind of like my
And where would you consider your, you know, whatever latency you have today, how would you compare that with, you know, other similar apps like ChatGPT, voice to voice? Like, yeah. have you tried looking at comparing the two?
Yeah, so we did have a technology we call Kernel that we started working on this pretty early, more than 2 years, that we basically established a streaming model. Because if you think about why there's a latency, so if you press this button, the microphone starts recording, and you're recording in an audio file. And that audio file needs to be converted into strings, and that strings send it to the dictation engine or TTS, speech to text engine, and convert to text, and then that text send it to OpenAI, ChatGPT API or Perplexity API or whatever large language model for intentional understanding, and then it starts generating based on their speed, and then it's a round trip, right? This is a single trip, and everything reverses again. So if you add all this together, if you just go there and build a voice AI with no optimization based off GPT-4, we know for a fact that single dialogue you're looking at probably 5 to 6 seconds. But we made a streaming model to where, you know, we basically cut off the chunks into a very, very small timestamp chunks, and we make the entire model streaming. I think I'm not the best guy to talk about this. Maybe our CTO later on can, you know, write something about this. But we do have a technology make the sequence into a streaming. We're not necessarily accelerating GPT or Perplexity speed at the moment, but with this streaming mechanism that you know, if you ask non-search up-to-date information, we're constantly hitting the benchmark, which is 500 milliseconds per response. But I wish, you know, I wish our team, you and me, can do something just on up-to-date information search.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.
Maybe we can push this bar a little bit, because again, this is whatever we're going to push, this is going to be industrial standard. Because right now,
absolutely.
Right now, this it is what it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are certainly at the cutting edge here. Mm-hmm. And in fact, like the fact that you wanted to do it through streaming, that already makes it much, like the perceived latency is already a lot better than waiting for the full response. And, you know, I think there are so many more things we can do to speed it up. So I also want to talk to you about, you know, you selling 50,000 units in 5 days. Mm-hmm. There was a tweet from Daniel Gross where he said, for context, the iPod sold 125,000 in the first quarter. An iPod is considered a historically successful product. And the iPhone sold like 270,000 in the first 48 hours. So it's obviously like, you know, R1 is way more, looking at the pace, the trajectory, it's likely going to beat the iPod for the whole quarter.
Yeah.
And what, so obviously you're, you know, there's going to be high expectations for the next device you're going to make. And so what are your plans for R2 or further devices in the future?
Yeah. So, first of all, I didn't quite know that number until I saw that tweet. And that makes my head spin for a sec. But I also realized that, you know, we're talking about no internet, no Twitter versus internet Twitter. I mean, word spread at a different pace of speed, right? So I don't think we're outperforming iPod at the moment. We're a very, very young startup, and this is our first generation device. When Apple launched iPod, they have a tremendous history of setting up the bar and make everything iconic. Pretty much everything they did, you know, sets a bar. So first of all, I'm not delusional just by the numbers that we're getting for the first couple of days. We're not delusional that we're arrogant enough thinking that, okay, this is better than iPod sales performance-wise, because, you know, the time is changing and they don't have social media whatsoever. So I would assume if Apple has social media back then, and probably going to be way more than that, because and from that angle, you know, to your question, to your point, is that I don't think anyone is certain of which form factor will be the best. I just saw Mark Zuckerberg had a Twitter today about, he talks about open source of Llama 3 that they were developing. And on the end of the mini clip, he said he believes that glasses are the best form factor because it sees what you see and listens. I don't quite agree with that. I think, you know, no one has figured out, or no one should have the confidence before they even test it on the user's hand and say, okay, this is the best form factor. So the hardware decision of R1 is not pushing the edges on all the components. But the other way around, quite contrary, it's the other way. It's a result of de-risk, you know, like, because we are new and the operating system are new, the entire AI stuff is new, and we don't know what's the best form factor either. And plus, there's a lot of latency issues, of course. So we don't want to risk presenting a completely new way of interacting with devices, plus give you another kind of like insecurity of, oh, this is completely new form factor and you have to learn from the start how to use it. And that's why when we design R1, we think about, okay, we need to present something that you're already familiar with, but in a new way. And that's where I'm so happy that communities are getting it, because the first thing I did is I bought 9 Tomokochi for my entire design team and engineer team back then. We're even smaller than today. But it was about a year and a half ago, I bought 9 Tomokochi from Amazon, and I sent them as a gift. I'm like, hey, this is what we're making. And then obviously, you know, we all love the Pokédex, and no one have yet made a Pokédex yet. So I think, you know, we want to bring that culture, you know, relevance to you. Plus, we know that the most efficient and highly redundant form factor of voice dictation and voice combines and voice interaction is not a wake word. I don't like wake word because I was at one time in a meeting with a couple of Amazon folks, and obviously we're talking about Alexa, and obviously they keep saying Alexa, and the entire meeting become a mayhem because they all have a Alexa speaker around, and then all whole bunch of Alexa start talking to each other, and that's very, very dumb. So I don't want a wake word. And then what if you don't have wake word and you think about what's being already in use, right? And then I think I have another example. I'm like, okay, think about what's the most crucial scenario that you need to use voice and voice only. Then we think about the modern warfare, right? The soldiers and the military folks. They're either fight or dying, but they all have this very redundant design, one button, no nothing, just one big button right next to their chest or right on their headset. You just push and talk, and you're not pushing and waiting for a activation sound, and you start talking, and then automatically detects when you're off. You have to push and hold it. And then on civilian market, yeah, it's even more common. It's called walkie-talkie. We all know that, and we all have that. So I guess that's why we combine all these elements together to put in those thoughts, and that eventually set the form factor of R1. We want to offer you a modern version of Tamagotchi and Pokédex powered by AI, but with a very redundant push-to-talk button that you probably already know how to use.
Yeah, that's very insightful. Like I didn't realize that your rationale for having the button was to, you know, not get into this problem where there's like a whole room of people using a bunch of devices and all of them are calling them out by their name.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so, look, I mean, the other thing, you know, is obviously, you know, we've been sort of building this in public. I mean, first of all, you've been doing it way more actively than pretty much anyone I've seen so far, like to the extent that everyone on X is like a supporter of your company. So what did you learn the most? What surprised you the most about all this attention you've got and all this customer demand that you've got and user love that you've got so far?
Yeah, that's a great question, actually. You know, a couple of things. First of all, this is not my first startup. You know, I've dedicated my entire career building ideas on my own. I think this one in particular, with the Journey of Rabbit, which we just started, is that what I learned, you know, probably this is something that I learned in the past weeks, you know, to be honest, is that I didn't expect how tired of people towards their existing apps and existing phones. You know, I know I want to get rid of the apps. And I know iPhones are boring, but I don't expect to start such great waves of resonance that, you know, people are accidentally designing new form factors for us. That's what you see me post on Twitter with supports. People are designing watches. People are doing all kinds of different things and different colors of Mihara. So I think that question surprised me, because I think, you know, maybe it's going to be very hard to convince people that this is new and you have, you know, we need to figure out a magic for people to love it. I think that's quite surprised. And another thing is that I think color played a lot of roles here. Like, I would say that if we designed this to a Apple color scheme or, you know, a mainstream color scheme, say if we use just matte black or silver, I wouldn't expect the R1 can be as iconic in design industry as so quickly as what we are experiencing now. So I think color played a lot of factors on helping us to get our you know, images and form factors out there. But to myself, I also learned quite important lesson is that, you know, no matter how successful you are and how well educated and experienced you are, I mean, being a startup is a reset. You know, if you want to do a startup, it has nothing to do with whatever you did before, and it has nothing to do with your past you know, titles or whatever that is. It's always a hard bootstrap. It always starts from the beginning, and I think, you know, that's why, you know, I try to put myself as transparent as active as possible, even though that sometimes is quite exhausting, but I think, you know, we position ourselves, if you look at our teams, you know, amazing team, they've achieved a lot of things. But, you know, we, deep in our heart, we understand we're a new startup. We're a new startup, and this is our very first product, and nothing needs to be prejudged. We have to, you know, act like a startup and catch up with the startup speed and be the fastest guy out there, and at the same time be as transparent as we can.
Speaking of that, like, what are some other AI products, you know, out there that is interesting you and exciting you today?
Yeah. Well, I like just to test new things. You know, I guess you can categorize myself as like a super early adapter. I was actually in the Alpha test group back then. I was actually one of the first. I think I'm probably the first 200 guys to ever get hold of Google Glass back then. And obviously, I'm one of the early Oculus DK1 purchasers. And obviously, I support Eric at Pybo. If you guys still remember Pybo, the first e-ink smartwatch. So I tried a lot of new things. I keep trying new things. I probably set up an alarm on Friday to order the Vision Pro as well. But I think when we started Rabbit, there's Humane, there's Avi, Tab, there's, you know, Meta Glasses, there's a new generation of Google AI or whatever that is. But we don't, the way we position ourselves is we first position ourselves as users, right? I first ordered a Humane AI Pen on day one. I'm still waiting. And I watched the entire talk from Avi, from Tab. I learned a lot, you know, like, it's quite a different perspective that everyone is working toward the same goal, which is, you know, that's the thing I think we all getting excited. So the thing is, I put myself into the user perspective. And if you put yourself in the user's perspective, you kind of like, you know, because you are also doing the same thing, you are making a new device with AI, that eliminates a lot of your personal egos, and that eliminates a lot of your, prejudgment or misunderstanding. But really just to put myself in the user's perspective and make relevant decisions. Because if I put myself in a user's perspective, and knowing that the current level of AI, I'm not sure if I'm gonna pay $800 plus monthly subscription, right? I'm not sure if I'm gonna just get rid of the screen completely. And I'm not sure if I'm gonna wear a glass I paid $6,000 to get a LASIK to get rid of my glass. I'm not sure why I'm gonna put a glass every day to work. So, you know, we put ourselves in user's perspective, and I interview with each of our team members, like, what do you think about this if you're a user? We got a lot of the insights. I think that's the best practice anyway. But again, for the record, I like competition. I think competition is great. If you have competition, that leads to innovation, that leads to honesty. And ultimately, with competition, everyone is going to make their product better and much more affordable and accessible. So all in all, competition benefits customers and audiences, right? So we love competition. That pushes us move fast. I think, you know, put yourself in user's perspective. That's most important.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any thoughts on, you know, in a imaginary future where Siri is able to do a lot of things voice to voice with generative AI more natively? Do you think the phone form factor is still like amazing then, or there's a lot of people who are skeptical about like, why do we need another device?
Yeah.
If eventually Apple is going to blast a new version of Siri to everybody.
Yeah. I'm sure that's going to happen. I'm sure we accidentally accelerated these guys to make themselves push a little bit more aggressive than they're currently doing. There's no way to avoid that, right? So like, not because they're going to do what they're going to do. And my honest opinion towards that is that I've known enough people within these big companies to learn that I think general public don't get it. Sometimes, you know, we saw news that, oh, Apple is doing this, Apple is doing that, and Google is doing this and Google is doing that. But if you really knew a couple folks there, and they'll tell you, oh, they're just a small team of 10 people with a limited budget of $2 million. You know, that's what's really is. So for big companies, that they have this massive established ecosystem that changing anything is going to be a very, very, very hard sequence. So I think, yes, you can wait, but it's going to be a long time. It's going to be a very long time. I don't personally foresee how Apple can, just based on the current experience of the iOS, you know, following the current incentives of the apps to, you know, basically encouraging people to build one app for one thing, and all of a sudden re-ramps everything and makes something like a large action model. And same to other companies. But however, I think, you know, form factors, yes, I don't like to carry two devices. I personally don't. I think no one should. If you can carry one device, you should. But I think a lot of people are not holding the R1 in their hand. And if you hold your R1 in your hand, you're surprised how light it is. It's 110 grams. And try to go to your fridge and pick 2X, and that's it. And then how small it is, because I have a ridiculously small hand. So I think, you know, my demos is not a good reference. I just met another guy. They're like, oh, you did this wrong because you have a small hand. People don't get it how small it is. It's an exact same footprint of your iPhone Pro Max width-wise. So 50.
People said that even for the Vision Pro ad where they said Apple pick people not with like big heads.
Yeah.
Ideally, you want to pick people with big heads because the Vision Pro headset looks so massive.
Right.
I don't think it really matters.
Exactly. Like, yeah. But I think, you know, like I said, no one can confidently say, oh, hey, this is the best form factor. I personally think that phone is good because it's just a little piece of glass with a basically edge-to-edge screen. That's the current generation of phone is. But phones are relatively easy to make, not from engineer wise, but purely from resource wise. You know, there's a lot of reference designs, you know, teenage engineering, which I said board of, helped bootstrap nothing, the entire nothing with CalPay. So we know the phone business quite well. Phones are relatively easy to source if you're talking about cars and everything is more established. But I don't think that we should just present a phone for the first generation. We'd rather do something small, cheap, and fun, and slowly evolve through that. So there's no guarantee that we said, oh, we're not going to make the phone. We can, but I don't think make the phone as first generation is a good choice. But for those companies out there, I think they started to try something new. You know, like we see Meta start trying glasses and all that different stuff. But all in all, I think, you know, hardware is just a vehicle. It's a phone. It's a vehicle that hosts what's inside, and the software experience matters. What's truly renovating about Rabbit is not about this $199 piece of hardware. That's the vehicle to host LAM and Rabbit OS and good services like Perplexity. I think the software experience matters. So to us, it's almost like Apple. You know, like we figure out LAM, and LAM is so good that we have, and we quickly realize that this cannot be easily developed as an app, easily developed as anything out there, and running on their platform. So that we decided to do this hardware. And if you think about Apple, iPad was actually before iPhone. iPad was the first project in this current generation. Now iPhone was actually later on. But I Steve first wants to build a glass, just a pad. So hence the iPad. And Steve asked the team to research on how to work on it, how to interact with it. And the Apple engineer presented multi-touch. And the multi-touch experience is so good that Steve actually postponed the iPad project just to the iPhone straight away. I think LAM gives us a similar feeling. You know, like we know LAM is so good that we don't want to just build an app. We don't want to just build a website. We don't want to build just, you know, on the system that is not controlled. It's not specifically designed by the LAM. We'd rather to take a little bit of risk to do hardware. But form factor wise, like I said, we de-risk that. We de-risk everything. And R1 is a result of de-risking. But no one knows the correct form factor. I have to say that. Yeah. The market will tell.
Speaking of that, all the market that you've seen so far, the 50,000 people that have ordered your device, and hopefully like hundreds of thousands more, What are you seeing as use cases people are excited about, and like how much of that requires something like real time live information, the kind of information that Perplexity provides you?
Yeah, so for me, you know, I've been carrying a R1 earliest version in the prototype, and now I have the ready version. I've been carrying R1 in my pocket for probably past 6 to 8 months. Couple of the scenarios I really, really don't need my phone is that, first of all, search. I don't think the current app on your phone or website are giving you even close, reasonable answers and accurate answers and precise answers. I guess that's one of the biggest reasons that Perplexity becomes Perplexity, because the search wasn't just good. But there's a lot of daily search I need, and I would rather to just get a pinpoint answer. So I use search, obviously, I use search a lot, and it's actually easy for me to do that on R1 because I probably on something else, you know, all the time. I probably have, you know, my Slack message coming. I probably on on X and checking on Twitter. I probably on the email thread. Then for that blink of a second, I just press a button, ask a question, and give you the answer right away. So I use search a lot. I also like the music because again, music today is more of a companionship other than dedicated activities. You don't just call your friend and be like, hey, everyone, what you're up to this afternoon? And you'll be like, hey, Jesse, I listened 3 hours of music. Like, no one do this. Like, music is on the go, it's on the back end, it's on the ambient. So, but we do need music. So music is always, you know, kind of like sit behind the scene role, kind of like that. So I give you a live example. You know, I sometimes I play games, and I'm, you know, literally focused on a game, but I can then press that button and change a song and play the entire different collection of my music library. That feels really cool. And given by the fact that the music starts immediately, 500 milliseconds. Another big scenario is I'm you know, living in Los Angeles or anywhere virtually in America, I guess except New York, you drive a car a lot, right? So there's a lot of hours that I spend on road driving the cars. And no matter what kind of different car systems you're with, you know, R1 connects to my Bluetooth. And again, I just press that button and I set navigation, ask questions on the go. I change, add a stop. I search for a gas station or a charging spot, and as well as control my home media. I think that really, really, it's a really, really satisfying experience. And
One thing that's really satisfying to me is that at least finally now people can experience other kinds of search,
right,
product search experiences, rather than having to, you know, be dictated upon one decision on swipe down your screen because someone's paying you a lot of money. So I think that's great. And like, you know, we should push the field forward with like more cutting edge experiences for others. And I hopefully that, you know, that's also another motivating factor for people to explore this new device.
Yeah, definitely. And finally, I want to mention a new thing that I'm currently super interested in is a capability of the Camera Plus Search. So Vision Plus Search, that's Pokédex, basically, right? You point to the Pikachu and ask what this is, and it gives you the entire Wikipedia density of answer towards it. I think that's such a great educational tool for the younger generation. I mean, when I grew up, I want to learn everything about everything. And now think about if we can put a real Pokédex in a future generation of kids, and then you take them to the zoo, take them to the park, and they just start exploring using this Vision Plus advanced search like capacity. I think that's a very, 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 very exciting scenario.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point to wrap this up. And, you know, I'm super excited to work with Rabbit. And I want, you know, hopefully this is the beginning of something amazing for many years to come.
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, it's just getting started. We know that most of our team are working together on some really, really exciting things to make it much, much more than what we should do today. But I think, you know, the key for us is we want to work with the best services on our device. And search is such an important catalog that we simply want to choose the best. And Perplexity is the best right now in the market, given by my own test. But we know everyone probably in your mind, you have probably 10 more ideas. And I probably have 10 more ideas on how we can make it even better. That's where we're heading.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Thank you, everybody, for joining. And hopefully you can go and purchase your R1.
Yeah, sounds good. So we will send an email with the Perplexity code. If you just follow the announcement on our Twitter, we'll make sure this is a very smooth experience. And thanks for the generous offer again, everyone, the Perplexity team. We're super excited.
Thank you. See you
all. All right. Bye-bye.
This space was downloaded via spacesdown.com. Visit to download your spaces today.